Welcome to Three Guys On. This is Haywood Turnipseed Jr.
I'm Andy Klein.
And I'm Randolph Terrence, bitches.
Respect that pimpin'.
You guys didn't think he was here, did you? You thought someone else was here.
I'm back with you.
All up in you.
We back, host.
Happy to be back. Listen to the podcast last week. It was, man, I was jealous.
We had some fun last week.
I was jealous.
Russ Green needs his own podcast.
He's got stores.
He's got equipment. He bought equipment. It was going to be him and his wife, a la the Black Guy Who Tips podcast.
Yeah. It's a good idea.
But, like, they went and bought. Yeah. They went to Guitar Center and bought equipment. And I asked him about it, because that was a couple months ago. Yeah. He said, hey, where's that podcast you've been working on, yeah, Russ? And he said, I think, you know, he's tried to get his wife to coordinate schedules and sit down and record, and they just haven't done it. You know, you get lazy. You got to be committed. Yeah. You got to put out episodes every week,
yeah,
and get on a schedule, and they just haven't done it yet. But he's got shit to talk about.
Does he?
He's a talker. He's got good stories. He is a talker. So
I was out. I was in New York. By the way, this is the Mighty Strains of Nicolay. Turn up a little bit. This is Nicolay.
This is a new album.
From the Foreign Exchange. Fonte, mm-hmm. I follow Fonte on Twitter, and Fonte was flooding my feed. Fonte,
friend of the podcast.
he might remember us.
Was flooding my feed, and I was like, you got me. That's Fonte singing in the background right
now. Damn, it's fire right here. Yeah.
You know what this reminds me of? Music that plays in a store that I would buy stuff from. A clothing store.
I know exactly.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep. Right.
It'd be something to me, yeah, me and Haywood, we have very distinctive different styles of dress. Yeah, we could go in that store and both find,
yeah,
Andy would be ass out. They don't sell flannel.
He'd be like, ooh, look at this right here though, man.
Yeah, I would do a lap. I'd be like, alright, let me see.
He might find a nice pair of shorts in there. He might find a nice pair of shorts.
Yeah, that's true. Because they usually have cargo shorts.
Yeah, they always have some nice cargo shorts. This
cargo
is the nice beach wear stuff.
Nice shoes. Find me some nice bracelets. Hat.
Hell yeah. Lounge dress.
Hat, bracelet.
This is the store that has cufflinks and everything.
with a DJ, by the way, because they'll have a DJ in the store on the weekend. Just be like, this music's loud as
shit.
What
do you call it? Matter of fact, this might be a haberdashery.
I was just walking like, do you guys have anything in gray or black? No.
Like, actually, we do have t-shirts because actually the casual male wear.
Yeah, but they're all like blue and green
male.
And shit. They're all colors.
Not
if you're going to get something, get Nicolay's new shit.
Yeah, that's
it's,
fine. I'm
it's not bad.
Up.
It's not bad. It's very much music because that's what Nicolay does. He's very much a musician. But he just dropped an EP. It was only two singles. Hmm. It's called, let me make sure I got it right, Nicolay, The Brightest Star / Afterglow. We just listened to The Brightest Star.
All right.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Way to go, Nicolay.
Star / Afterglow. So Nicolay's doing it. That is Fonte's partner in the Foreign Exchange. That's enough.
They're big. They're doing it.
Yeah.
They've
been doing it.
Yeah. Every time they keep VH1. They keep me watching VH1, so.
I know. They're always on.
They keep me watching
that. And they're good dudes.
Yeah.
Before we kick this off any further, we've done. Do you want to do it now or you want to wait?
I don't know. I guess we could.
I'm talking about my weekend. I was in New York.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Talk about the. Because we saw pictures and some video.
Yeah, I post pictures a little bit. I was in New York over the weekend, for those who don't...
Last week.
Don't follow me. I was in New York City. I stayed with Mr. Courtney Farrington. Had a good time.
He has a roommate now?
Like yeah, that? Yeah, he's a comic.
Okay.
He's a comic out of San Antonio by Austin.
All right.
And I did a couple spots at the Broadway Comedy Club. Shout out to... Gina Savage. You guys probably saw a picture I put up of me and Gina.
Yeah.
With Wally, bro.
I'm like, ooh, this nigga gonna get his.
We couldn't keep a straight face. Well, we posed like that, and we couldn't keep a straight face because we knew Wally was behind.
I'm like, that's one of the ones that get you in trouble, son.
Wally's sticking his face down the back. This picture is so funny to me. With Wally Collins, very great comic. I had a good time that night. We did two shows. did a show in the main room, and then their second show was in their little room. Remember the little room?
Yeah, the side
It looks a little different. They brightened it up. I liked it when it was
black.
Black. Yeah, it was nice black. That. But they brightened it up a little bit. Did a show up there, and then Friday did Courtney has open mic at the Creek in the Cave.
Oh, what?
Right.
Did that. It was nice.
Like the Creek.
Yeah, it was nice. Like Courtney's running it nice.
Hey.
She's running nice. You get 2 minutes, be funny fast. That's all I got to tell you.
Boom, in and out.
Got to talk to Brian Parisi and Mike Elstringham. I haven't talked to them in a while.
Parisi started something up there soon.
Parisi's in town this week.
Is he here?
He's at the Improv.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Featuring.
Yeah. Got to watch Ted do his hour of new material. When they lunched with him Saturday, walked around the village. I haven't done that in a long time.
Ted Alexandro.
Let me tell you, I thought about you because I was walking through Washington Square Park.
Uh-huh.
And these guys were playing chess.
Oh.
Serious, serious motherfucking business. Let me tell you something. All those chess boards were set up, but these two dudes were playing. I stopped and watched them for a while.
Yeah.
And by watch, when you watch somebody play chess, you're basically watching them look at the board.
Right.
Right.
You're watching them think.
Waiting on them to make them. Serious motherfucking business.
Like I stood there Fresh. For a while. You remember that movie Fresh with Sam Jackson?
Yeah, but they were playing speed chess.
Oh, so they were getting it in.
No, they were playing real chess. Oh, they were sitting and just watching. Yeah. They weren't playing speed. Yeah. They were just watching
It's like watching poker.
Yeah.
Speed is fun to watch because it's just
they got to make moves.
Fast, back and forth.
I love watching old dudes play chess, man, because it's like, how did he think? Okay, that's what he was thinking of that whole
time. That was like 20 chess boards set up.
What is the...
Dudes were sitting in a... All these guys... A guy challenged me. I walked by. He was like, you want to put some chess? I'm like, no. No, I don't have money to just throw away.
So people show up and they call next, like they're at the court?
Yeah. Challenge games.
Yeah. Okay.
Like you walk in and there's like a dude, he challenges you for money.
Yeah.
You put your money down, he puts his money down.
Like poker.
You win, right. You get it, like he poker. Wins, he gets it. It's a 1-to-1 bet.
Yeah, let's go.
And I walked by and he was like, I guess he thought I looked like I play chess.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the glasses.
You got the look. You're walking through.
Yeah. You want to get some of this young blood? I was like, no. That's exactly what he said.
So you watching the other cats. Like,
yeah.
He's like, this dude knows something.
You want to get some of this young blood? I was like, no.
That happened every time I go to Giant. I sat in one game, and then ever since then, they're like, come on, sit down here. Come on, sit down here. I'm like, man, you are not taking my money no more, sir.
And they will take your
money. They playing with Social Security money. They playing with retirement money.
Yeah. They will take your money. I was like, no. You ain't taking my money, old man.
No,
my brother, you got to get your own.
Well, they don't have like pool sharks have cool names, like they're all fats and stuff.
Fats.
do chess sharks have?
I would assume the rook. The rook is a cool name.
Yeah, the rook.
Oh, don't
the rook right
that's
there.
The rook, man. Don't fuck with the rook.
The white dude is the white knight. Look at the white knight.
Oh shit! You would be the white knight.
And you know, there's a bishop. There's somebody named Bishop.
There's someone named Bishop.
Yeah, there's a girl called Queen.
Bishop shows up with a Tupac shirt on.
New cats are called Pawns.
he shows up with a Juice poster.
Acolytes are called Pawns.
Well, Fresh was, that was his name, Fresh.
Fresh, yeah.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, it's a man.
You haven't seen it.
Is
Fresh.
It? Oh,
yeah.
Man. Oh, everybody go down.
Sam Jackson,
Punisher
chess.
Go down.
Bobby Fischer comes in and plays me.
Right. Fuck that motherfucker, Bobby Fischer.
You can suck my dick. You can tell him I said it.
That shit was hilarious. Like, oh my, he just cussed out Bobby Fischer.
Fischer comes in and plays me.
I believed him.
Yeah, he was like, well, that's me and Bobby. The game, that's me and Bobby Fischer playing right there.
Yeah. Man, you ever see that movie on Bobby Fischer? Like, whatever happened.
The documentary.
Yo,
yeah, I watched that.
Yeah, he was, man, that dude, such a... Tragic Genius is like,
and
those are like
one,
my favorite stories.
Searching for Bobby Fischer. That's a pretty
good
one.
That's a good one. That's Joe Montana.
That kid, Josh
Waitzkin. Yeah.
Yeah, Josh Waitzkin.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And Joe Montana had the best line. For those who haven't seen the movie, Searching for Bobby Fischer is about it's about a kid named Josh Waitzkin. True story. He's a chess genius. He's a prodigy. And his father started him on chess at 7. And by started him, I mean he just kind of randomly gave him a chess board, walked away, and his son was beating the shit out of him at it.
Yeah.
So he started taking him to his little chess matches, and he rose up to the rank of grandmaster.
Fast.
And, I mean, he tells his teacher, that's the best line when he tells the teacher, because the teacher's like, he shouldn't do this little chess thing anymore. It's taking him from this. He said, let me tell you something, woman.
Woman?
He's better at this right now than anything you're going to be in your life. Zing. That's the best line I've ever heard.
Zing.
And then the kid grabbed his balls. Like, you suck it, teacher.
Yeah, well, you know, they make that's what I love about the movies. They make everything interesting because it's like, oh, man, it was like basketball play. It was like, yo, might as well dunk on you right now after this one.
Right. The shit his father was going through, like he became like a stage dad, and then he got away from that. He realized what it was doing and trying to learn. Lawrence Fishburne's in it. He taught him that street style play.
Yeah. That's what you need. That's what you need. And it's like he saw the street game.
The and one mixtape chess tour.
Yep.
That's pretty much what they were doing. Street chess. Because he had a real teacher, the white teacher.
Of course.
Was teaching him the white way.
The right way.
The way to lose to the Russians.
The right way.
The way to lose.
Remember, this is all about beating the Russians, this chess game. It's all about beating the Russians.
Lawrence Fishburne was teaching him that time in the street, in the park, Washington Square Park. Just play fast. Don't think. Just
make
play.
The move.
Don't think.
So you already know what kind of move you're going to make. You're just going to make it. Your whole thing is outwit your opponent.
Yeah.
It's really getting in their head.
Yeah. Make the move. Be fast. Don't think. You know. And it was him, the kid, blending the two styles together.
Yeah.
I saw him doing an interview at some point. He's a very eclectic kid. He stopped playing chess for a while, got deep into martial arts.
Yeah, makes sense.
Went back to chess. Makes sense. Started dominating again.
Yep.
That's because of his dad. His dad was like, you don't want to play, don't play.
Yeah.
That's makes like when sense. Michael Jordan played baseball. Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he comes
exact
back.
Exact same thing.
Only we found out later that Michael Jordan was going to get, not suspended. Banned, but suspended.
You believe that conspiracy theory?
I'm leaning towards it because it came from nowhere because we know where he was. We know what happened.
I don't believe it.
And it makes sense.
I don't believe it.
It just makes sense to me.
I don't believe it. You don't want if you're basketball, you don't want the greatest player not playing. You just don't suspend it.
But how do you not suspend it?
This is the easy. You just say we ain't going to suspend him. And that's, matter of fact,
this is Mike we're talking about.
Here's what you say. That's what you say right there. Just that right there. Just
yeah.
You just say, hey, Mike, can you stop doing that? No? Okay, well, don't worry
about it.
All
right, gambling's not illegal.
It makes sense to me. And it was a win-win anyway for Rizdorf because he owned the Bulls and the White Sox. Yeah. So it was a win-win anyway.
Gambling's
whatever Jordan
not,
did
gambling's
at that
not
time
illegal. You can't tell somebody not to gamble.
You're just not on the game.
Yeah, well,
which he didn't do.
Yeah.
He didn't gamble on games.
As far as we know, he didn't.
So the problem that he was gambling, and he was gambling on everything.
Well, no, the problem.
The problem was
the conspiracy is that he had fallen in with some loan sharks and some shady characters.
Now that
so,
I don't believe he was making too much money. That I don't.
Yeah, I mean
that I don't believe.
Well, I don't think he was in debt, but he was just, you know, when you get to the high stakes shit, you're dealing with shady people.
That I believe. Yeah, yeah.
So he owed money to people that could harm the image of the NBA, et cetera, et cetera.
They don't want this element. At the time, they don't want this element around again.
Again, I don't. That's not. You don't. Well, you don't then, suspend the best player in the league.
But that doesn't. It still doesn't make sense because then when he came back, what, did he stop gambling?
No, we know that. No. We know he did. Matter of fact, Jordan bet on himself.
Right. Learn my lesson, guys.
I was school 55 in this one. Watch.
I mean, he gambles. Jordan, people talk about he gambles so much money. I'm like, do you know how much money Jordan makes?
Oh, yeah. He's never going to be broke for
a
gambling.
Day?
Man, that's not going to happen.
Are you stupid?
Well, remember when he came back, the contract, he's like, I'll come back. I'm going to sign for 1 year. See, I think it was a combination of things. I think it was a combination of the gambling, and it was the fact that the contract with the Bulls wasn't nowhere near what he was wanting.
He never asked
was
for more all those years. He asked, he wanted $3 million a year. That's
but at that time, he could have got more. And then he came back, he got what, 35 mil?
He got
35
30
mil.
The last couple years. Got 30.
It was ridiculous. It was just like, and he signed what, 1 year contracts?
Yeah.
So I think it was a lot of that and the gambling and, you know, his father passing. Like, you know what? This is time to walk away.
I don't
want to
do this anymore.
Well, then that's part of the conspiracy. His father was killed as.
See,
as
I don't think,
payback,
I don't know if that.
Gambling
that,
debts.
Yeah.
That to me is ridiculous.
Yeah. It's just like, he had too much money. I mean, he could have paid off his debts. We know that. You know,
yeah.
Kill his father.
And what's he going to. How much.
You kidnap his father, if anything.
Yeah. You're
going to kill
him.
His father.
You ran.
Yeah.
Taking one.
Right. You're like, hey, you know, we got your daddy. Oh, okay. Yeah. Here's that million I owe you.
I have a particular set of skills. None that help me in this situation.
Yeah.
But I can cross people up. Pretty well.
Yeah. He's not Denzel in Training Day where he got to get it like $1 million by the end of the day. This is not, he's not that.
That could be the movie. Like, remember that movie Gymkata?
Yeah.
Like the guy used his gymnastic skills to take down ninjas. Like, Jordan could be dunking on kidnappers and shit. Like, he's dunking on them and they die.
Somebody did write that movie.
He gets his father back.
Somebody wrote that movie.
Rest assured.
Remember when he was in him, Bo Jackson, and Wayne Gretzky had the superhero TV show?
Oh, God.
The cartoon? They were all like, there was like three champions or something.
I got my head on the mic.
It was good.
I don't remember the cartoon. I remember they teamed up for something.
Yeah, like they did a cartoon series. It was good.
Yeah.
They were like three heroes, and they were like, they would
saving
use their
things.
Baseball, like they would They were in these body suits, like Under Armour suits, right? Like short set, like, you know, cycling suits.
Right. Yeah.
And then when it pop off, they get into their hockey gear or their basketball gear. Or in Bo's case, football or baseball.
Or baseball.
Oh, so he was like the Superman.
Oh, man,
he,
you know, who knows Bo? You ever see that, 30 for 30?
Yes.
Bo knows?
Yes.
Man, I've been watching. I was sick last week, so I had to watch it.
You watched a bunch of them. You watched a bunch of 30
Man, I watched that one, the one on Bab on Detroit.
Yeah.
That one was awesome.
You watched the one about Otis Dupree, I think is his name.
Which one?
Out of, he was a running back out of Oklahoma.
Yeah, Oklahoma. Oh, man.
That guy actually has done well for himself.
That was good. Yeah?
He's got like a. He's done a couple things. He's got like a shipping business, stuff like that. He's done well for
him. I wasn't mad at him at the time. Like when he walked away from like Switzer, it was just like, it was him and Barry Switzer. It was just, that was just beef. It was just like, Barry Switzer's like, no, you're going to play my way. And he's like, no, I'm just going to play.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just a kid who wanted to play football. I don't know how Barry Switzer fucked that up. I mean,
he was good. He made it all the way back to the NFL.
Yeah, he was
great.
He
made it all the way back.
He was fucking
He wasn't his old self at that point.
Yeah.
Like, he lost valuable years.
He just kept playing.
Like, he was trucking. I mean,
he was productive.
He could have kept being average. Like, I don't think he would have accepted being just an average average run-of-the-mill running back at that point.
And it's possible.
It's not the same. You lose those
Yeah, because he was like,
years.
I just made it back. I played one season.
Yeah, he might have made it all the way back. I think he might have.
No, he did.
He would have been a star.
Like, if he had kept playing, he could have kept playing and made it back to his, you know, like, he's like, you got these athletes. Like, Herschel Walker's still an amazing fucking athlete.
Right.
Herschel Walker could walk on the field right now and do something.
But so, running backs, though, when they have layoffs, they don't make it back all the way. They can make it back to okay, but they often don't make it back all the way. Something, I don't know what it is. You just miss something.
Well, yeah, because they're the only ones who can step in and play right now. They always say that's the easiest position to play because it's just like run.
Yeah, and
there's always a younger guy with more speed.
That's what it is. There's always somebody younger. Like, remember a couple of years, it was like, okay, there was Otis Garner, then it was Ron Dane.
And
it was like these 1,000-yard, 1,200-yard rush, Bam Morris, back to back to back to back to back.
Right.
It was ridiculous. So
Bam the drug mule Morris. This motherfucker.
Steelers fan, though.
This motherfucker. This motherfucker.
Steelers, man, they're a dirty team.
Him and Leon Lett, boy.
No, it was Nate Newton.
Nate Newton. That's
Nate Newton.
Nate Newton.
He had like a van full of pot or something.
Yeah,
two van fulls. Remember the first one he got away,
got
off on.
Twice.
And then he did it again. It was just like, wow, you ride with weed.
We in the draft house. These dudes are watching this something intently.
Yeah, that's how you watch.
Like, we watch that football.
We're at the green room of the draft house.
Intently.
The side room.
Recording this. Let's set up this interview we did.
All right.
What was Lowell's last name again?
Dean.
Lowell Dean?
Yeah.
Okay, for everybody who knows, you all know by now, I watched, live tweeted, and have praised Wolf Cop. You all know I have watched, live tweeted it, and praised it. It is a good, bad movie. That's all I can tell you.
It's on Netflix.
Get drunk, watch Wolf Cop on Netflix. Anyway.
Every shot. The game you played, I got to play. I got to play the bourbon game while watching it. I have a shot.
You got to get sick again.
Yeah.
So you can watch it. So you can catch up on Wolf Cop.
Yeah. So, that's what I should have watched.
I reached out to Mr. Lowell Dean via Twitter. Lowell Dean is the writer and director of Wolf Cop. He came. I asked, "Hey, would you mind if we interviewed you for Three Guys on a Podcast?" He said, "Nope, I have no problem with that at all." We set it up. We interviewed him for 20 minutes. And we talked to him about Wolf Cop.
Yeah,
and also about the future for Wolf Cop. And what is to come for Wolf Cop? He's a great dude.
Yeah,
he's very funny. He allowed us to say anything we wanted to say. He's just a good guy, and after hearing the story and all that, I couldn't be more pleased how the shit all turned out for him and how the interview turned out for us.
You're going to be the next Wolf Cop. You know this, right?
I couldn't have been more pleased. There was no black people in the first Wolf Cop. I didn't bring it up to him, but.
Well, it was in the middle of Canada, though.
Yeah, it's in the middle of Canada.
You're going to be the next.
Yeah, there's no black people
you're
in any movie.
You're going to be the next Wolf Cop. Guy in bar drinking. It's going to be a jazz.
Yeah,
you're
going to
incorporate your skit.
Yeah.
It's going to be you at a jazz bar club.
There you go. It's in the jazz bar.
Maybe you could be his partner. But you use only your boxing skills.
Plucky.
So you put on your gloves.
Can I be Plucky Comedy Relief?
You put on your gloves to stop criminals.
Can I be Comedy Relief
Make
at least?
Quip?
You'd be the Brandon Lee to his Dolph Lundgren in that movie.
That horrible movie, Shounen Little Tokyo. So listen, here's the interview right here. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. This is us talking to Mr. Lil Dean.
We'll be back to the regular
back
podcast.
Back afterwards. Wolf Cop, listen. Hey, everybody. It's Randolph here, and I'm here with Andy. And we are here with Mr. Lil Dean. Now, many of you heard me talk about the movie Wolf Cop, and I've been talking about it. Well, guess what? Mr. Dean here, Lil Dean, wrote and directed Wolf Cop. We thought that I reached out to him via Twitter, and we thought that it would be great for you guys to hear from him. So here we are. You want to say hello to the people, sir?
You bet. Hello, and thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you for doing this for us, and thank you for answering me on Twitter when I reached out to you. You never know who you're actually reaching to. Do you run the Wolf Cop Twitter feed, or is somebody doing that for you?
You know, we have a team who handles it. We've got someone dedicated to it, and I used to run it in the beginning, but now we've got someone else. So it was hard to give over the reins, but the person running it is really great.
Yeah, let me tell you how the Twitter feed was the whole reason why we're even speaking right now, and I've set this up for everybody. I don't know if you know the story, but one night I'm scrolling through Netflix, and Wolf Cop pops up in my movies to watch. Okay. So I tweet, I don't know anything about the movie Wolf Cop. So also, by the way, sir, before I start get too deep into this, we're comedians. So understand there'll be a lot of jokes being said, okay?
Fair enough. Just
to warn you. So I tweet, "Hey Netflix, I don't smoke weed anymore. I don't think I need to see Wolf Cop." Ha ha ha. That's a silly little joke, right? It's a good weed movie.
Yeah.
A little while later, the Wolf Cop Twitter feed comes back to me and says, "Hey, but do you drink?" And I was like, "Well, I don't know if my liver can handle enough the alcohol I'd have put into it to watch Wolf Cop." Ha ha ha. They come back. They say, "Oh, well, we think you're up to it." Now I'm like, all right, that's it. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to live tweet this movie, and I'm going to drink bourbon, and I'm watching Wolf Cop. And that is what I did, and I live tweeted it, and your Twitter feed was great. Whoever's handling it was great. We had a great back and forth. Somebody else got pulled into it, and they were live tweeting it also. So, and then I was...
Yeah, I think a lot of people have been finding it on Twitter, and definitely through Netflix doing the live tweet thing, which I got to say, as someone involved intimately with the making of the film, it's hilarious and a joy to watch.
Yeah. It's live tweeting. You just kind of get, I'm too old for live tweeting. I really feel that, but I was like, all right. And it is fun to sit there. It's just a lot of stopping and starting, but so what? It's fantastic. Plus I drink a lot of bourbon. So Lowell,
which probably makes the Twitter, a little more challenging.
Yeah, it makes it a lot more challenging.
A lot of typos.
Where are you from?
I'm from Saskatchewan.
You're from Saskatchewan. Have you always...
Yeah, the smack middle of Canada. And,
yeah.
Yes, I've always been from Saskatchewan, and hence Woodhaven and the world of Wolf Cop is actually not too far off of my reality.
Is that a made-up town, or did you take a real town, Woodhaven?
No, it's a made-up town. We didn't want to slander... Okay. Any of our local spots too much. And Woodhaven is not necessarily the most flattering representation.
What year was Wolf Cop supposed to be set in?
You know, we don't have a set year. I don't think it's the 80s. We definitely went for an 80s look and feel.
And yes,
that just kind of came out of prep. You know, I hate cell phones in movies, especially horror movies. So yeah. I said, I don't want cell phones. And then as we were going on, you know, in each production meeting, each department meeting, talking with costumes, talking with props, we just kind of realized subconsciously, just based on the decisions we were making, it was an 80s movie. But to me, maybe it's just one of those towns that is so sadly behind the times that you'd go there and you're like, someone here has internet, right?
Yeah, I noticed that.
That kind of thing.
I didn't really think about the cell phone. What caught me was the boxy Impala. The outcast player's ball Impala that the police officer was driving around. And I was like, look at that boxy Impala. What year is this? I learned how to drive in a car like that. That's how far back that goes. Yeah, and I was just...
Yeah, no, we just wanted it to feel timeless in a way. But, I mean, you know, 80s horror movies, especially a movie like Wolf Cop, should have come out of the 80s. So, you know, my dream would be to have it on VHS at one point.
Yeah, oh, that would be fantastic. How long did it take you to, from the initial idea of writing Wolf Cop to starting on production to finishing it? How long do you think that process took you?
It was just over 2 years, which is really quick for getting a movie made. And I kind of credit the ridiculousness of the idea, because I'd been banging my head against the wall trying to get 3 or 4 other films made and was getting frustrated. And I kind of said to some friends of mine in film, I just want to get something made. You know, what do we have to do to get a movie made? And jokingly said, what if I'd made a movie called Wolf Cop? And everyone's eyes lit up. And I was like, really? You all want to see Wolf Cop? And they were like, yes. So that was it. You know, we had an army and we said, let's make Wolf Cop.
What is your background? You had already been, because I saw on your IMDb that you had already directed a couple of other things as well as a kids television show.
Yeah, I had done some television. I've been working in film and television for, I'd say, about a decade. I've done it all. I've done documentary work, narrative work, documentary, shorts, short films, and music videos, of course. And the brass ring is always, you want to make a feature, you want to sit in a theater and watch it with a group of people in the audience. And yeah. So I had done a feature prior to that, and it wasn't something I had written. And so it was a really rewarding experience and a big learning experience, but the tone wasn't exactly what I wanted. So I said, I wanted something a little goofier. I wanted to do something that was, you know, a horror movie, but still, you know, I don't want to say you roll your eyes at it, but there's moments where you're like, Jesus, this is absurd. Yeah. So that was all kind of rolled into Wolf Cop, is just trying to make something that walked the tightrope of 5 different things, you know, horror movie, comic book movie, silly movie.
I'm glad you said that, because when I was watching it, the one question I really wanted to ask you was, which I think you already just answered, was when you sat down to write this movie and set out to make this movie, did you decide, make a conscious decision to say, look, I'm going to make a good, bad movie?
Yeah, I mean,
you understand what I mean by like Roger Corman.
Oh, I know exactly.
Roger Corman's made 1,000 good, bad movies. The Last Dragon, a movie I love, is a good, bad movie, you know?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. And that was the eternal struggle of Wolf Cop, is you can't call a movie Wolf Cop and expect that people are going to not think it's ridiculous and silly and a B-movie or grindhouse movie. But also, mm-hmm. I had the other side of me where I wanted to really care about it. I wanted to, you know, not just be lazy with how we shot it or the effects. And so, yes, in a way, we were trying to walk the tightrope line of, we want to make a movie that feels like a bad movie and gives people everything they want from a bad movie. But we also wanted to put our heart into it and be a little bit aware. You know, you don't want to be winking nonstop where it's like, this is all just one big joke. I still wanted people to be like, wow, that character's badass. I want to see more of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Has horror movies always been the thing for you? Because, like I said, you directed children's stuff before. Was horror always kind of in the back for you, or was that the movies that you kind of cut your teeth on growing up?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say, like, I mean, I wanted to say, like, oh, don't most filmmakers when their kids run around with fake blood and severed hands? But maybe they don't.
I'm not a filmmaker, yeah. So if yeah. you say it, yeah.
No, that's always been something for me. I think my parents were worried about me at a young age just because, you know, pretty much anytime I'd be doing storyboards when I was a teenager, I only needed the color red. I'm like, and blood everywhere.
Yeah. Were you the kid that had the Super 8 camera as a child, or the VHS camera, and was directing all your friends in the neighborhood to cut heads off and stuff like that? Were you that kid?
Yeah, I was exactly that kid. We had a VHS camera, then we had a Hi8 camera, and it was that's how we played. You know, other kids were, I don't know what, playing football or playing some other make-believe game, and I was with a camera and 5 or 6 of my friends trying not to burn something down.
We burned a lot of stuff down when I was a kid. Did you go to college for it, or did you just kind of...
Yeah, I did, actually. I went to film school.
All right.
That was, you know, it's a good experience. I'm, I recommend it, but I also, you know, maybe you don't need it to make a movie like Wolf Cop.
Well, you got to know the technical stuff. You can't just set up, I think I'm going to make a movie Wolf Cop, and then what?
Exactly. No, it was all for the emotional depth of the character that I took my school.
Of course. Of course. Where else are you going to be able to write those crying lines? You wrote all the lines, though, right? Did you have somebody else come in and help you with the writing, or did you just sit down and write all the lines and do all that?
I wrote it, but I mean, no film is an island, right? So yeah. It's a lot of collaboration involved, a lot of feedback from producers, a lot of feedback from cast. You know, a lot of the actors were chosen for their comedic backdrops. So
okay.
People like Jonathan Cherry, who played Willie Higgins, and
yes.
Amy Matisio, who played Officer Tina.
Yes,
they both have a strong history of comedy. So
okay.
And they were, you know, made very aware this is a playful environment, and schedule permitting, which it wasn't always. You can throw some funny versions here if you have better ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
Was there anything where you wanted something in it, but you just couldn't get the shot or the scene or the effects weren't good enough? Like, was there something that you couldn't let go of that you really wanted to have in there?
No, nothing that we didn't shoot. I mean, there is one. If I ever had a director's cut, there's at least one shot I want to put back in where... to me, it was one of the funniest moments in the film. It's, you know, the scene where in the crime scene in the bathroom where Tina holds up the severed face.
Yes, yes.
That scene went a lot further, and she actually picks up his severed penis. And to me, that was really funny. I think there was maybe a general consensus that went a little too far, but, you know, to me, you can't go too far.
Well, you started going far when the... when you had the change start at the penis, I was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
How did you...
Well, we wanted to get your attention, right?
You got it. You got it right then and there. How did you decide on the bursting out of the skin? I've never seen anything like that as far as werewolf change. Were you trying to push the envelope of a changing werewolf? Because it's usually just hair coming out and a lot of yelling and, you know...
No, that was a practical effects artist, Emerson Ziffel. He and I sat down and talked a lot, even as I was writing it, and he really wanted it to be skin ripping. That was important to him. He said, I've had some ideas on how to do these effects. I've seen other werewolf movies. I think this is something that hasn't been done enough or that we could do really well. So he brought that to the table. And then when we were making, you know, decisions on what to show, we realized our budget wouldn't allow more than 3 or 4 shots. We weren't going to get like a 12-shot transformation. So we said these shots better count. And
so you have to have, had to have the dick shot. You just had to have
it. Yeah, you have to. Well, to me, the dick shot is worth 5 normal shots. You know, that's right. Going to grab you right away.
It got me.
It is the money shot.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
All day. All day. I remember I was watching the scene. I remember thinking that I think I tweeted this town clearly doesn't have a CSI department on their sheriff because there's DNA everywhere, and
yeah,
she's playing
exactly.
With his face.
Maybe it should be DNA for that reason alone.
Yeah, it's like they don't, they can't have any type of CSI.
Yeah, we'll get the results back in a couple of weeks when everyone's dead.
Andy had a question about getting it on Netflix.
Yeah, what's the process once you have a movie made to actually get it on Netflix? Do you have to do anything special there?
What was the movie that you said probably wasn't on Netflix?
Oh, I don't remember.
Mummy Janitor, I think.
Yeah, like Mummy Janitor.
Mummy Janitor.
Yeah, that movie's not on Netflix.
That should be on Netflix. I would watch Mummy Janitor. I honestly don't know. That's more of a question for the producers, and I should know probably, but I don't. And it was actually kind of funny. I did not even know it was going to be on Netflix until I think someone tweeted and was like, "Whoa, Wolf Cop's on Netflix." I'm like, really? That's amazing. And I went and checked, and sure enough, it was. So, I mean, after this movie actually was made a year ago. So for me, it's a kind of an expected thing that if it's, you know, an existing film and you can put it on Netflix at some point, you hope it'll get on Netflix.
Yeah.
But, no, it was a welcome surprise for me.
Well, that's great. How long from you think from the time you premiered it? Did you premiere it at a festival or did you just premiere it in a theater?
Well, we actually, I don't know if you know the backstory of Wolf Cop, but we actually got it made through being selected for production by something called the Cinecoup Accelerator in Canada,
okay.
Which is basically like American Idol where anyone can submit their film idea and you rally for votes and try and get the world's attention. And after 3 months, they pick the film that they want to get made, and it gets part of the deal is you get $1 million budget and guaranteed release in theaters.
Okay, so this is was this a contest on television where the public votes?
No, it was completely online. It was on social media, and it's actually happening for the second time. As we speak, you can go to cinecoup.com.
Yeah.
It's cinecoup.com. And they're doing it again, and they're going to select another film. And
I'm going to go look.
We were the first one selected. There was 90 teams across Canada, and Wolf Cop was selected at the end of 3 months. So, yeah. I mean, we had other plans and designs on how to get the movie made, but we didn't have to, thankfully, explore them because we got the deal with Cinecoup, which was far better than any other case scenario because we actually got to get the movie in theaters in Canada and see it in nine bigger theaters across Canada.
So that's where Mummy Janitor was at. That's one of the Mummy Janitor was one of them.
That guy lost. He's so pissed right now.
Yeah.
He's just
music. He's somewhere licking his wounds.
Yeah, he was in the theater shaking his fist. So you went into nine theaters. Did they put you on like DVD, the production company, did they put it out on DVD and all that?
The DVD, Blu-ray, great-looking Blu-ray, great special features. And it's been out, again, it's been out for a while in Canada. I think in the States we came out in April on Blu-ray with Image and in Canada, Anchor Bay. So, yeah, we had already had a release, and it was a decent release. But the Netflix experience, I got to say, has been not only shocking but great. The amount of people who are seeing it, you know, when you don't have to go out to a theater or something. Wolf Cop's a great, like, 2 a.m., double home drunk and be like, what is this? I guess I'm doing that.
It's 9 a.m. with a Twitter feed open up and a bottle of Jim Beam Bonded in your hand. Jim Beam Bonded is 50 proof, Daddy. So that's what you watch
Wolf
Cop
with. It.
So your budget was $1 million. Did you stay under budget or did you go over?
I think we were a little over a million, but it was tight. You know, we were shooting 6 pages a day, which if you know much about film production, that is crazy fast.
Yeah.
And that was including like a fight scene or some effects or things like that. So it was a race.
Yeah. How much, I can't imagine, I can't think of how to phrase a question, but how easy is it to burn through $1 million? Like you got $1 million sitting on
the
table and you're
ever.
Like, yeah, let's make a movie. How fast does that money burn out of your hands?
You know. $1 million is literally nothing. $1 million is if you've made like short films with your friends, and it's like, you know, you have a very small crew, people aren't getting paid what they would on a regular film or a bigger film. And $1 million is enough to have everyone get paid, make their rent in a movie like Wolf Cop, get some awesome effects, and put everybody up where they need to be. You know, you got to bring in actors, put them in hotels, rent vehicles. Hopefully have one explosion. It's gone before you know it. I had in my script more fight scenes, and we had like an intervention a month before shooting where the producers basically said, pick your two favorite fight scenes and put you can afford.
Well, at least you had him with you. Somebody was there looking out because it wouldn't have been you.
No. I would be like, what? You're out of money?
What are you doing a sequel then? Is that confirmed?
I believe it's confirmed, yeah. Cinecoup is, I think, rallying the funds now and figuring out when, where, and how. And if all goes well, we'll be shooting it, I think, by the fall.
So Cinecoup is bringing the money together for you. Are they going to still try to give you the $1 million budget, or are they going to go a little higher?
I think we're going higher. We need to go higher. The goal is $3 million for the sequel. I mean, it needs to be bigger.
Yeah.
The only way we could make a movie called Wolf Cop at the $1 million budget is, I think, to make it an origin story, because I will tell you, most of the money went into the second half of the film once he is the wolf.
Yeah,
cop,
once he's the wolf, yeah.
Yeah, so if he's going to be Wolf Cop off the bat, we're going to need a bit more money.
Are you worried about losing the grittiness and the absurdity of it if you start to put more money into it?
No, I don't think that'll be a problem because I don't think we're going to be seeing the $100 million Avengers version of Wolf Cop anytime soon. $3 million. I've done a $3 million feature, and I can tell you, it still doesn't feel like any money. Anything under $5 million, the money just goes.
Okay.
It disappears. Especially on a union shoot.
Yeah.
All it does is gives you a couple more days to do things right.
So we're probably not going to see like Wolf RoboCop or something really high concept.
No, you won't notice any difference. There won't be like an army of Wolf Cops fighting Wolf Cops. You'd be like, oh, That was a couple of better explosions. I like that.
Yeah.
All right.
The Wolf Cup won't be CGI. So we're looking at, are you going to put Electric Boogaloo in the title? Because I have decided that every movie that has a 2 in it should have Electric Boogaloo in it. So it has to be Wolf Cop 2 Electric Boogaloo.
I will neither confirm nor deny that.
Okay, I'll take that.
You're not the first person to put that suggestion forward.
I'll take that. Wolf Cop 2 Electric Boogaloo, I'll take that. Oh, and the other question I had for you was, how do you have a sex scene where he's a wolf and you don't have doggy style? How did you miss that?
I think we shot it. I think at the end of the day, this wasn't in there.
You don't strike me as the type of man who would miss that obvious.
Yeah, we have him howling too. Right?
I know. So I was like, how is he not behind her howling?
I think at the end of the day, we just went for pure. Tender, shockingly erotic love.
It was very tender, and it was shockingly erotic.
Yeah, he's only part wolf. So.
Yeah. The man in him was there that night.
Ah, okay. And how did you come up with the title Liquor Donuts for a grocery store? That was fantastic. I took a still shot of the camera and put that up on my Twitter feed. This is a store I need to go to.
I think that was our executive producer, Jay Jolly. I think, I forget what I had in there. It was something far less...
Liquor donuts. And if somehow you had worked the word titties into that title, I would have fucking fell out. Liquor donut titties. Yeah. Just, I don't know.
Maybe, there'll be an expansion at some point.
Well, you got more of a budget next time for Wolf Cop 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Exactly.
I think you answered all the questions that we have for you today. And let me tell you something, man. I'm happy for any artist that's able to do it the way you're doing it and do it on your terms and kind of come out. So I just wish you more success along the way, as much as you can possibly get.
Thank you very much, guys. Thanks for taking the time to check it out and joke along with us on Twitter.
Yeah, thank you for coming on and doing this. And believe me, we'll be posting this on Thursday and letting our people know all about it.
Yeah.
And when Wolf Cop 2 comes, I'm coming right back at you.
I'll be here. I'll be here ready to talk about it.
All right, man. Thank you so much. We so appreciate this.
Thanks, Lo.
You bet, guys. Take it easy.
You have a good night. And we're back. We hope you guys enjoyed that. It was, like I said, I thought it was a great interview. Hey, he was a great dude. I was pleased to hear that Wolf Cop 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Working title.
Coming. That's the working title.
We talked after the interview. I didn't mention this on the interview, but he mentioned that they won a contest. You enter a contest to get your movie funded, and mm-hmm. his movie, Wolf Cop, won.
Yeah, his movie won.
You know some guy wrote his Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, man. I put my blood, sweat, and he's fucking mad as shit.
Like,
right,
Lowell's
now.
Just like, I'm going to write a funny bad werewolf movie.
Some guy has his, he's been working on it for 15 years. It's
His godfather is sitting right there.
Yeah.
And then Wolf Cop makes it to Netflix, and now it's trending.
Yeah.
The thing I liked about it was how fast $1 million goes. Yeah. Making a movie, you think, oh, $1 million, that's a lot of movie to make money to make a movie, right? No. Yeah. No, it's not.
Yeah, that's
so I'm looking forward to Wolf Cop 2, Electric Boogaloo. Hopefully it goes right to Netflix.
Oh, that's the only way to fly right there.
And we sit down and get drunk and watch the shit out of
Wolf
it.
Wolf Cop 2.
Yeah, maybe action figures, maybe merchandise after that.
Oh, it's definitely one of those like Leprechaun and what it's going to be.
You should do that.
Yeah, it'll come. Because you can sell that at, what's that store, like Spencer's and shit like
I
that?
Went into a store in New York. I can think of the, I didn't catch the name of it. It caught my eyes. I was looking. They were sold all kinds of action figures. I would have bought 2 for Courtney, but it was a little too pricey. Yeah. There was Stormtroopers. There were $300 for 2 Stormtroopers. There was 2 Stormtroopers in the scene.
Yeah, I know. It was
fly, you know, Courtney's a big Star Wars head.
Nerd.
I was like, I'll give him some of these. I was like, ooh, let me just put these shits down and walk away.
We did that earlier, man.
Put these shits down and walk.
Yeah.
It's
Star
a lot of
Wars
shit. It's
nerd.
So shirts, books.
Oh, yeah. That's the best part about New York. All of those
dolls.
Like they're not the dolls. They're action figures.
Thank you. Bootleg. Okay, so where are we at, Andy? So
we're at now at this point, since we did the interview with Wolf Cop, we're about 40 some minutes into the podcast.
Okay.
We have 3 emails.
Well, let's hear the emails, and then I guess we'll get to the Duggars on Thursday.
Well, there's one of the emails references a story that we might get to today anyway, so I'll do that one last. But the first email is from Kathleen. We all know
Kathleen, friend of the podcast.
She is referencing
Cutie with the booty.
Referencing the episode called Wax Zenith, which was last week on Monday with week. Russ. We were talking about his story about Brian McKnight. It generated almost as much feedback as Elton's story. But not quite. But it's only been a week.
Yeah.
But Kathleen, she's talking about something else that we talked about that episode, which was how long should sex take, basically.
Before we say that, this is what I say to this.
Randall's eating cheese.
Sex takes as long as it's supposed to take.
That's not what we were.
You understand?
But that's not what I said on the podcast was. Sometimes you think it took a long time. You look at the clock. If you really look at the clock, you're like, oh, that was 11 minutes.
Yeah.
It seemed like 45 minutes.
That's 11 hard minutes.
Yeah. Though. But that's the thing.
It's 11 hard minutes.
Like you know, you hear these R&B songs where the guy's like, all night.
Yeah.
Like that's a fucking eternity.
Yeah.
You know, all night and part of the next day, and then we'll stop and have a meal. We'll order some pizza, and then all 48 straight hours. Yeah, then you look. You like, well, that was a long time. You look at the clock. Like 9.5 minutes went by. You're like, oh, that wasn't that long. It seems longer.
Yeah. Well, sex, and then most of it is sitting around talking about what you just did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whose bit was that? I don't know if it was Schimmel. I forget whose bit it was about. My girl said sex should take 45 minutes. I said, does that include the drive over? I don't know if it was Schimmel. I gotta look up who that was.
That's exactly right.
Kathleen says, hey guys, I just want to say a huge thank you for talking about practical sex and validating that sometimes true romance is being considerate of sleep. Sometimes that's the other thing we talked about. When you're younger, you're like, I'll just not sleep tonight. And then when you're older, you're like, let's get it in by 11.
Yeah.
She said, when I was listening about the time frame, I was curious because I've never timed it. I was thinking that 7 to 12 minutes was accurate, but then out of curiosity, I checked the clock before and after. It felt relatively long for a weeknight, and it was 9. So there you go. That's an answer for Russ's poll. Got to be honest, now that I'm married and we know each other so well, I start to feel insecure if it goes much longer.
Yeah, you don't need...
Yeah, you're like, well, we know all the...
You know the buttons to push. Yeah.
What you taking so get, long for?
Yeah, you know how to get to DEFCON 1 quickly.
Right.
So...
And 9 minutes so long is... For? It's fine. Quality over quantity, you know?
Yeah.
And then she says... Yes. Haywood's here. This is going to be awkward. She says, love Russ Green. I would recommend a sock puppet promotion.
All right.
Hey, was number one.
Hey, Russ. Right. He could be 1A.
1A. Hashtag Randolph Lynch.
But then you still got Elton out there. And then Philippe. It's all of us individual levels.
Well, there's people. Romaine hasn't been on in a while.
Oh, yeah. See? Yeah.
If Romaine comes back, he might just knock all y'all off.
I saw Romaine the other day, man. He's hilarious.
Yeah. Romaine's another one. Again. He's had some great stories. Yeah. We got more people with stories.
Fantastic story.
Romaine had a whole 2012.
Yes, he did.
A whole
talking
year.
About his 24. Yes, wait till his 2015 has been interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's becoming interesting.
Yeah.
We got to wait until 2016 to talk about him, probably. But don't get self-conscious if it takes 9 minutes. That's
a good time.
Most people who thought it took an hour, if they really timed it, it'd be like, oh, 11?
No, they say in comedy, 7 sevens, and then you're out of that.
Yeah, get the fuck out. Just,
that's 49 minutes.
Hit it and quit it.
That's it.
Yeah, girl. 63 straight hours, girl.
That's so stupid. Why would I want to fuck that long?
72 hours, wrong. Girl. All night, and then the next day, and then a night after that, and then the whole other day, girl.
There's still friction. You know how much gel you got to use?
Yeah, at some point, you're
here's what I'm
going
to do. I'm going to fuck you as hard as I can for as long as I can.
I'm going to
right.
love
And then I'm
you,
going to sleep.
Right.
Already
yeah,
know.
Let that other dude bother you all night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going really. To sleep. I ain't no young boy.
What Bernie Mac say? 2 minutes. That's a heavyweight
fight. That's one round heavyweight.
Monique sent us an email
Monique.
About last week's episodes. Hey, 3GO, you guys know you guys know you're my faves, right? Episode 470, Randolph lives. I'm glad Tim is back for the first time. I love to hear him laugh. He always sounds so tickled. It makes me smile. Well, he's not here today. Sorry. Hey, Russ Green, you might for bringing the 1800 silver. Russ brought 1800 silver tequila to Tim's house last
night. I heard about that. Yeah.
My uncle says it's piss water, but shit, I like it.
By that 1800, that's that Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah, it's got a it's got a built-in shot glass. How the hell could anyone front on that? I swear, y'all always hit the nail on the head when it comes to 90s R&B. I guess because we're all around the same age bracket. I was 14 singing my first broken heart out to Brian McKnight's One Last Cry.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's the song. Yeah. That's the first, that's the first heartbreak song.
That
a lot of people had.
That was just depressed when he first came out. He had that song, The Way Love Goes, on his first CD, too.
Yeah. If you don't want to, don't waste her time.
On the downside. I'll take her.
Just take her. I think some light-skinned video chick with curly hair was always cheating on him. That's true. That's the weird thing about. I mean, I know I've talked about this before, but a lot of like
light-skinned broads
men,
have options. That's what the problem
but
is.
It's not even that. It's a lot of like Boyz II Men songs and Brian. Yeah. It's like the girl cheated on him, and he's like a pot. Like,
yeah. Right. Girl,
please take me back.
Right.
She's the asshole here.
The main difference between 90s R&B and 80s R&B is the level of sensitivity.
Yeah.
Like, in the 80s, it was like men saying, "This is okay, yeah, we're men, we're going to be sexy and sensual in Marvin Gaye vein, in the Teddy Pendergrass vein.
Yeah.
Then in the 90s, it became almost apologetic for being this tall and this big and having this deep voice. Yeah. Oh, girl, I understand why you want him because I'm soft.
I'm sorry you cheated on me. It's my fault. And then
the 2000 thugs came.
With Jodeci.
Like Jodeci and Jaheim.
Jodeci was simultaneous.
Scare
with
you out of
men.
The pussy.
Well, and that's what made Jodeci a hit because they were like, we doing this.
Yeah.
And then it was like, you know, every freaking day. Every freaking day.
Every freaking night.
But then they had enough sense to say, I'm sorry for that.
Yeah.
Monique also says, episode 471, Kiki Wyatt and Avant got a few duets together. She pretty much out-sings them on all of them.
Yeah, she does.
We were talking about how she just comes in and kicks in the door.
Now, is she out singing him, or is he pulling back to allow her to shine?
Well, I think Russ's point was he's building it up like you're supposed to, like starting, and she just comes in immediately, with the fucking
walks,
you know,
all
extra
over
shit.
It with her fucking Timberlands.
No, she's actually a drummer.
Puts her Timberlands in your face.
Yeah,
she's a drummer, so that's how she sounds when she's singing.
Is she a drummer?
Yeah, she's a drummer, and Monique she beat her husband's ass. That's how she sings.
She beats everybody's ass.
Like she's just coming in.
Monique says nowadays she has like 5 to 7 kids and she ain't chunky no more, but she still got that voice. You can see that she's a little off if you spent any time watching R&B divas.
Yeah.
Which I know y'all don't, LOL. Yeah. I love the thump sound effect. I'll play that in a second. If a pulled his dick out and that noise happened, I wouldn't know if I should stay or leave post haste because I want Mandingo dick, but I also like having an intact cervix.
You would stay, girl. You'd risk the cervix.
Anyway, as usual, y'all keep me entertained. Don't change a thing.
You'd risk the cervix. You might go in scared, but you'd stay.
All right, here's the truth, right? I know a young lady, or she's older now, who... She had sex with a friend of mine. She was like, I couldn't have sex with him no more. And I was like, not you. Because she's
too big.
She's a Rolling Stone. I used to call her Rolling Stone. We'll call her Rolling Stone because she has no moss on her.
Yeah.
She has no moss. She runs through them. She ran through a few of my friends, right? And she was like, that one. She was like, I couldn't.
She ran through a few of your friends?
She was older. We were all a little bit younger, and anybody who thought they could handle it, she was like, okay, I'll give you a shot. You can see if you can play basketball on this court.
Right.
Not everybody can play in the league, right? Yeah. Evidently, he could play in the league, but he was like Shaq. He was breaking back. Exactly. She was like, I've never said this, and don't you say nothing. So the fact that I'm saying this on the podcast.
Right. But well, you didn't name names.
I didn't name names. So don't nobody know who she is. She's like, that, I couldn't. She's like, I couldn't. It was a thud. It was like, pow. I was like, really? That nigga was like that? She's like, he's like that. Start calling him tripod. Three star.
That's a good problem to have.
Yes, it is.
For a dude. That's, yes, it is. That strokes the ego.
You know what Paul Mooney say? The nuns say, cut here and here.
Yeah.
And we got an email from BK, who emailed us before. And BK sent us a story, which we were going to probably talk about anyway, but we'll get to it here. I really enjoy your shows. Highly entertaining and funny. Of course, that's expected. You guys get paid to be funny from time to time.
Sometimes.
I plan to write up a nice iTunes review for the show. Please do. And also Stitcher.
Do that.
I just wanted to get your thoughts on the Bay Area teacher who did not slash does not want Steph Curry to visit his school. Well, let me finish. Want Steph Curry to visit his school. I don't want to misrepresent the teacher's view, so here is the teacher's blog entry, which is the Yahoo article, which was being passed around Facebook.
He's a douchebag.
But the blog entry is literally from the teacher. It's really long, but we all read the article.
Right.
I read the blog entry.
He doesn't he's a fan of the basketball. He's not like some.
He's a fan of the Warriors.
Yeah. Right. He doesn't want Steph Curry. Steph Curry was never planning to visit the school, right?
Never. No. He just said
he is now.
Exactly. He just said, please don't.
So can we just do that? Can we just this is my blog to Selma Hayek. please don't visit my house.
Shit, right. Good choice.
Good call.
Good choice.
Please don't visit my house.
Please don't visit the Three Guys on
just
podcast.
Just in case you were gonna
please,
do it,
Selma.
Hey, yeah, hey, Dave Chappelle. I know you were gonna visit our podcast.
Don't ever come to the draft house.
Please don't come to the podcast.
Don't ever come in here. Please don't come to the green room.
Please, Dave Chappelle. We don't want that.
Don't get our hopes up.
I mean,
don't get our hopes up.
Please don't come and talk to us.
We could get $100 million deals from Comedy Central.
Please don't come talk to us.
Yeah, it's just so ridiculous that you're sending a letter to someone who has no intention that you know of.
Who didn't know about
it. But it's like it's exactly what you said. He sent it so that it would
get attention.
Douchebag.
He says, I'm riding every day. I'm looking at Steph Curry. I'm looking at the backcourt. I'm watching all this yellow. I'm watching the Warriors, everybody in San Francisco
and
Oakland have fun. And somehow we're missing out.
Well, because Steph Curry and a lot of NBA players, they do the whole shit where they visit a school and talk to the kids, and there's a camera crew there to document it for a commercial later.
Because the NBA cares.
Yeah, NBA cares.
A lot of people do it, though, without camera crews.
True. Right, but I'm saying, we know they do it because there's a camera crew.
Yeah, but a lot of people do it that we don't know about.
Yeah. Well, like Dizelle visits, like his mom, well, we know his family lives in the area. He visits Walter Reed all the time.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, I knew a lot of boxers who would go do it.
Yeah,
and no one gave a shit.
So what this teacher is saying is, if you're planning on going to a school to visit kids, let me tell you where you shouldn't go.
Well, don't come to
my school. Right. I'm a teacher at a school that has kids, and I don't want you there.
Right. I teach niggas. I don't want you getting these niggas' hopes up.
By the way, sidebar. Hey, Selma Hayek, come to the school.
Come to the school.
Hey, Selma.
Come to the school.
This fucking guy, man. When I read the article, I read it like three times. I was like, is this a real? This motherfucker thinks he's Michelle Pfeiffer in Dangerous Minds.
Yes.
Well, but the point is, why doesn't he want
this
Curry there?
This motherfucker, man.
Okay, why doesn't he?
He gave his reasons.
Well, his reasons stink.
Basically,
they're not valid. He is projecting. Go ahead, Andy.
Well, go ahead. I'm trying to find it.
His reasons aren't valid. His reasons are they're not going to be stars. They're not going to make it to the NBA.
It's like false hope.
Right.
So don't give them false hope.
Right.
But there's so much more that you give somebody.
But that's not the only reason.
Beyond that.
But then
there's
he says
so
that,
much more than that.
He says that the it's not even just false hope. He says you're giving them an extra level of false hope because of who your dad was. And because of
they don't have the advantages.
Yeah. It's like you were born with a silver spoon. I was like, whoa, how the fuck that? What?
Yeah, as if his dad
was an
entry. You know how many sons of athletes are not playing the sport their dad played because they weren't as good?
Talk about it.
Are you stupid? Is this the thing? I was like, are you stupid?
The fact that he had his father in his life shows you how much more necessary. It shows that these young boys who may or may not have children if they're in the high school level, how much more you should stick around because how positive a male influence can be in your life.
Well, and also these kids, if they are fatherless and hopeless, they do look to sometimes the athletes and whoever else they like as sort of substitute father figures in a sense.
Yeah.
So why not have Steph Curry
come and say,
here's
a good dude.
Yeah.
Right. A good dude.
Right, right.
He also
no trouble.
He can talk to
young.
Them.
Yeah.
He's a youngish cat. He made all the way through. He went to college.
Yeah. Loves his mom. Loves his family. Loves his kid.
He's trying to raise his daughter.
He's a good kid.
He's trying to raise his daughter.
Yeah. He's trying to raise his daughter. He's a good. He's a kid to me because he's a kid.
Right.
But
he looks like a kid too.
He looks like a kid. He's a grown man making his way, who devoted
and he's a baller. He's a
thousands of hours. Thousands of hours. Trying to be good at this thing.
Right. What the fuck did he go to college at? Drexel or some shit like
Dayton.
That? Dayton. And he made that a fucking
destination.
Right.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going there. So if anything, the Steph Curry teaches is like, stick to your guns. Because he didn't. Everyone's like, why are you even going to go there?
He didn't get recruited.
Exactly. Yeah.
So he wasn't as highly touted as other people. Like, he's had adversity. Granted, his adversity is different than these kids at this school. The guy also mentions Klay Thompson in his blog,
yeah,
who also had an NBA father,
yes,
but also has built himself up to be an incredible basketball player.
Yes,
yes.
Which doesn't just happen accidentally.
Right.
You know, right. Patrick Ewing Jr. is not in the league.
Michael Jordan Jr.
is not in the league.
And he played basketball.
Yeah. Patrick Ewing went to Georgetown Jr.
Yeah, he did.
Georgetown.
He sure did.
He got drafted by the Knicks, maybe second round. Maybe he was free agent after the draft. I think he went undrafted.
He went undrafted, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's a talented player. But he's not in the league. His name doesn't get him everything.
Yeah. Dale Strawberry Jr. is playing basketball.
Right.
Yeah.
So
he played for Maryland, right?
Yeah.
For
a while. Yeah.
So you don't want to give these kids a false hope that all you can be is an
what
athlete.
What false hope are you giving them, you bitch? Yeah,
that's my hope. What false hope are you giving them? Because here's the actual truth. And this is, if you want to say anything to Dale, to Steph Curry, it's the same thing that, what's the guy's name on ESPN?
Who?
The brother. Stephen A. Smith.
It's the
same thing he always says. There are only so many positions available. If you factor in that there's X amount of teams, X amount of positions on each, X amount of slots on each team, X amount of positions on the floor, then you factor in, or then you know how many positions are available. It's something like 1,348 are actually available every year. So that's the honesty in it. But you can be one of those.
Of course you can.
That's what the Steph Currys of the world show. Hey, well, I could be one of those. And even if I'm not one of those, at least I can maybe have a – it activates dreams and desire and imagination. And you never know where those things will take you. Your dream may be the NBA
last thing you said is the most important part is imagination.
Imagination.
It's not desire. It's a lack of imagination. A lack of imagination is – look, we're all stand-up comics.
Yeah.
That's because we all have imagination. We have imagination.
Yeah.
You can't do what we do if we don't have imagination.
Yeah.
The loss of imagination,
yeah,
to me,
yeah, yeah,
is the loss of everything.
Yeah.
All the inventions that we have, all the shit that you do, the cars you drive in, everything in your life is because somebody had the imagination to do that.
Yeah.
And there's a piece of shit like this dude.
Well, you know what's cool? You know
try to pull that from you?
Yeah. Like, I've been skimming his blog here. What's interesting about what he wrote is he's basically calling his kids idiots.
He is.
Yes.
He is.
He's saying they're going to see you and think I'm going to be MVP of the NBA too, even though they don't even play for their own high school basketball team. He's saying they're dumbasses.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, he's just shitting all over.
You're going to come in and you're going to give them a false hope. No, what you're going to do, what Steph Curry's of the world is when they come in, they show you that these are not people in a little box, that these are real human beings.
Steph
and they
Curry's
live on
a guy like Steph
Earth.
Curry is the perfect guy to be like, I took nothing.
Man.
And I turned it into something.
I live on planet Earth with you.
You can too.
But all these guys, when they do their commercials and their you know good guy shit, they don't say, "Hey man, work on your dribble." They say, "Stay in school." They don't come out and say, "Hey man, you can just shoot a lot."
Who has a joke when LeBron just actually says that? Stay in school.
Just shoot a lot. Just go shoot a lot. He's not going to come in and give the kids false hope.
Practice your dribble.
Where does that stop? That's the thing I thought.
Where does that stop?
Do you tell, let's say Denzel Washington says, I'd like to come talk to your theater department. Are you going to tell him, no, you know how hard it is to be a working actor?
Right. Or in the world we live in today, in that community, in the Oakland, San Francisco community that we're talking about, what if a police officer wants to come to school? You say, nope, because you're going to give them false hope that actually police and kids can get together
become
community.
And do something.
So when you do it on that level, you're literally saying, we know what he's saying, please come to my school and talk to these kids. Yeah. But when you say it like that, you're saying that these kids, they should be focused on their surroundings.
Yeah, yeah.
Which literally...
Like a vocational school.
Right, and what you're saying, they should just really... Basically, you doing the whole thing, nah, Malcolm, be a carpenter.
Yeah, you need to learn how to be a plumber.
You do it. You just said. I mean, he literally said.
Because that's safe.
Right. No. Be a carpenter. That's what I heard. I'm reading.
It's also
like,
saying you're not capable. I mean, granted, their kids are not. They're not adults yet, but you're not capable of understanding the big picture when Steph Curry comes to your school.
Right.
You're just a dumbass who's going to think I'm Steph Curry.
Right.
And then you're going to just stop going to class and shoot jumpers all day.
Right,
that doesn't happen.
Right. People think that about everything. They say that about rappers all the time, too. It's like, this kid can't be no rapper. Let me tell you something. you want to be like a serious rapper? The game will tell you if you can be a serious rapper because you've been in a cypher.
Yeah.
You've been in a cypher.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. The cypher will tell you, come on, man. Yeah. That shit you're talking about is bullshit, and you'll stop doing it.
Oh, you can't be no rapper. But remember, they said that about rap. Rap ain't going to be no real music.
Yeah.
And then this generation that's coming up under our generation literally has seen it go, well, we went, fuck it. No, yes, we can.
Yeah.
Our generation over and over again, well, yes, we can actually do this. Yes, we can do it our way. Yes, we can make a living, earn a living, and become someone on our own terms.
Yeah.
Without the first Allen Iversons is our generation. So these kids are looking up at that going, well, I don't have to do it your way. And this teacher is going, well, you need to start do it my way because this is my class and this is my world. And those are the teachers I really don't like because not using an excuse, but these are the people that say, this is all that it is and this is all that it can be and it can be no more than this.
I don't want that. I don't want them fucking nowhere near their, children.
How are you actually trying? What are you offering? How about you say, hey, Steph Curry, you know what? I'm not asking you to play pickup. I'm not asking you to play one-on-one. But which we know he does.
The kids will listen to you. They're going to listen to you because you're Steph Curry.
Yeah.
When you talk to them, tell them the truth. That's all he should have said.
Well, he also, not only does he call his kids dummies, he also calls Steph Curry a dummy.
Yeah.
He says,
entitled, though, but he says Steph Curry's entitled.
He says, what you will do is shoot some threes.
To a D2 college.
Right.
Here's what he says. What you do is shoot some threes, dazzle everyone with your dimples.
Right.
Is that all he does?
Right. Yeah, he did.
High five the homies and sign some autographs. Yeah.
The homies, that all he does?
This is when he comes to the school.
He said, you do cute stuff with your wife and your daughter.
That's all he does?
Well, hold on. I got to read this paragraph. It will be wonderful. At least it will seem like that at first. But what you won't see, because you're dumb, what you won't see is the fact that most of these kids don't have a backup plan for their dream of being you. If you ask the boys on my campus what they're going to be when they get older, the answer will involve a sport. They'll claim they're going to play in the NBA or NFL, and seeing you will make them think they can actually do it. Why wouldn't Steph Curry see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, what you won't see, like, because you're stupid, Steph. You won't get it.
Right.
Of course he'll see that.
Right. Yeah.
That's the whole point of athletes coming to school, saying, hey, you can't all be me. Stay in school.
Right.
I'm going back for my degree or whatever. Steph Curry went for 4 years, I think.
Right. Yeah. And then you got somebody like Shaq who went back to get
Steph Curry is a perfect story of I wasn't thought to be this.
Right.
They told me I couldn't be this. They said, you're not going
to be
this.
Remember, was it 2 or 3 years ago? He's still too small.
Yeah.
He's still not going to make it. And then he had that killer game in New York, and everybody was like, whoa, who is this kid for real? And then
perseverance. I'm going to be this.
You crossed up Chris Paul, and now it's like, well, wait a minute. Chris Paul isn't the guy with the handle. It's Steph Curry, the guy with it. So he keeps showing he's better and better.
But this teacher thinks that Steph Curry is going to go tell them all, you can be NBA players because I can't.
Yeah.
He's not. He's going to say, you can channel your motivation into the thing that you're going to do well.
Figure it out.
And you probably won't make the NBA because it's incredibly difficult and involves a lot of luck and other circumstances. But, you're going to be an underdog in something.
Right.
So you can overcome that. That's all the message is.
Here's another thing. Like, let's say you have an NBA dream and you dream and dream and dream and you do everything. And you bust your ass, and you bust your ass, and you get there, but you only get to a D2, D3 school.
Right.
You go 4 years.
Right.
But let's say you sign on as a film editor for an NBA team, and then the next thing you know, you make friends with Pat Riley.
Mm-hmm.
Now all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you're the coach of the Heat.
Right.
People are like, what? Why is this young boy the coach of the Heat?
Right.
And then you have two championships.
Right.
You've been in the title for 4 years, and you have two championships. Right. You get to work with the best players.
Right.
Point being that you can take just because you have the dream of playing the NBA.
Right.
That's going to work itself out whether you can play in the NBA or not.
Right.
But there's a lot of stuff. Maybe you play in Europe for a bunch of years.
Right.
Maybe you don't ever play
ball.
Right.
But maybe you just become a coach.
Right, you become a coach.
Or maybe, you know what?
Like a fucking Spurrier.
And you change people's lives.
Maybe you just coach in high school. Maybe sports aren't for you, but the lessons you learned in sports in high school do help you in your when you get back into the workforce, your 9-to-5 life. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, I mean, there are a finite number of jobs.
Discipline. Focus, just the focus.
Focus.
Single-minded focus that it takes to become an athlete. That takes to become a top athlete. It's just like, wow, okay, so if I applied that same single-minded focus to algebra, which the teacher says in the thing, like, oh, Beyonce, they'll say, hey, did you do your algebra? And the kids will be like, well, did algebra help your voice? Well, actually, it may have.
It may,
because it gives you the focus and it gives you determination and something to say.
A sense of accomplishment.
The ability to say no to a lot of stuff. The ability to say no to, no, you're not going to tell. And the ability not to hear no when
you're
you
not
know.
A dummy.
How many times do people tell those folk, us? How many times do people say, no, don't do that before we're going to stay? No, don't do that. Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Now, I kind of know my job.
telling me I can do more than one thing.
Right, right.
This fucking guy, he shouldn't be a teacher.
Right.
He shouldn't be a teacher. I firmly believe that. He shouldn't be a teacher. Right. He should not be a teacher.
Well, like you said, he thinks he's Michelle Pfeiffer.
Dangerous.
He's the guy. He's Matthew. What's the joke Bill Burr has? He's Matthew Modine.
He's her boyfriend. Yeah. He's her boyfriend cooking.
Right.
Wearing a sensible shirt. The dude's a fucking problem.
He's that white man's Bert. He's that teacher that's going, okay, I'm going to go in here and I'm going to save these kids because they don't have nobody.
Yeah.
So Steph Curry, the main reason I don't want them to see you is because I don't, and this is what I hear in my head, I don't want them to see a strong black man because there are none that exist.
That's what I think. When you say that, I'm like, you don't want them to see a strong black guy.
That's all it is.
You don't want them to see a black man who's strong. That's all it boils down
to. That's what it is.
And who's talented.
Is the teacher black or white?
He's white.
He's white.
Young white guy.
Blogging, okay. And he's talking about Sharonis Marshallonis.
But honestly, it's worse when it's a black guy, when it's a black teacher telling somebody that. I would never tell somebody, you don't shit on somebody's dreams. Derek Jeter told his father at like 9 years old, I want to play for the New York Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
What did his father tell him? Hey, man, fuck that. You need to think about being an optometrist like me. His dad didn't tell him that.
Right. That's what you want to do?
His dad probably didn't tell him the truth of, hey, son, that's a long shot.
Right.
His dad didn't tell him that. His dad probably told him, look, man, you're going to have to play a lot. You're going to have to practice a lot.
Here's where you start.
Is this the teacher?
Here's a ball, and here's a glove, and this is where you start.
Like, are you willing to do that? Derek Jeter, at 19 years old, went to play for the New York Yankees. 19. Went to play for New York Yankees. Played his whole career there and is going into the Hall of Fame. Don't think he's not, because Derek Jeter is going in the Hall of Fame.
On the first ballot.
Just on the hose alone.
First
ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
hose
Jeets.
Alone.
Yeah, Jeets.
You know?
But even that, I mean, the message that you can be a professional athlete is not a message that's universal. And I get the teacher's trying to sort of say that, but he's saying that the students are not going to understand that.
And then there are levels of professionalism. I mean, you might not be in the NBA, but you may make NFL Europe. They do have the NBA.
There are things to do.
Then they have semi-pro basketball.
You may be a shitty athlete.
You may come back and coach here.
Tell you something right now. If I could play basketball, if somebody had told me at 22, hey, you can play basketball overseas for the next 10 years. Are you fucking serious?
Talk about it.
I can play overseas for 10 years and make money?
Right.
And live abroad? Right.
Hang out with Italian birds?
Shit.
Yeah, baby.
And then come back and go to work.
I have
NBA.
A cousin who's over there right now playing ball. He's in Germany right now playing ball. And then like,
fucking serious?
Why would I stop? I'm like, don't stop.
Don't.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Don't. All
you know they get paid way more over here than the rookies over here?
It's like, I said it all the
they
time.
They started like a fucking lira, a million lira or some
my
shit.
My daughter got an offer to play in Europe. Like, go play in Europe. Don't worry about me and your mother.
I'm putting my kids in tennis camp this summer, and if they ever somebody say, you know what, they can do it, they gonna do it.
Yeah,
go as far as you can. I'm a Tiger Woods.
Well, that's kind of my point is if they can't, because even the odds are astronomically high or hard to get even a European. Yeah. It's not like that's a realistic.
But here's the thing: is that
my point is you're still focusing on, but you can still be an athlete. Some kids are just awful athletes.
Yeah,
that's true.
But they're not.
That's true.
Most kids are terrible athletes.
That's true.
The overwhelming majority of kids are terrible.
And what happens,
though?
Everybody gets weeded out by junior high school.
That's
right.
That's
point. When you start
but,
going.
But that
a
doesn't
little
mean,
that's my point.
But that doesn't mean seeing Steph Curry or looking up to an athlete will make them delusional.
Will make them delusional.
They can still
no one's delusional.
Apply that to whatever they're into.
Yeah.
Right,
he's
exactly.
basically saying, like you just said, he's basically saying that his students are stupid.
Yeah. They're stupid.
Yeah.
And that's not doesn't make you delusional.
I'm not a professional
to
athlete.
Think that
because
it'll tell you.
Because saying to a kid, well, you might not make the NBA, but you can always try Europe, is still, I think, ridiculous
that's
advice.
True. That's true.
What is ridiculous
that's
advice?
True. That's true.
My advice would be that because you don't play in the NBA, because you don't play in Europe, there are things to be gained from this experience.
Right.
There are things to learn from this experience. And maybe you go to work. Maybe you don't go to work. Maybe you go to work at a college team. Maybe you go to work on a high school level. Maybe you coach Pop Warner basketball.
Maybe you
walk away from basketball
completely.
No, to
your point, that's exactly what happened. Like my brother played college ball, and he wanted to go into the draft. He didn't get drafted, right? He didn't get to play pro ball. He played semi-pro ball, became a very good semi-pro ball player, arena ball player, and wound up coaching at a high school. God bless him and rest him. He's dead now, but he lived his dream and helped others achieve their dream of wanting to actually
play. And that was his thing to do.
That's it. And what do you get those that focus to say, well, you know what? My cousin right now is actually helping young – he was he played for Ball State. He's helping his son. He thinks that his son is going to go to Ohio State. He may or may not go to Ohio State. But the training and the focus that he's helping these – it's like five or six young guys that are getting better at their positions. So that being said, they're experiencing now just a level of intensity and just a level of focus where they have to go, you know what? If I'm going to be serious about something, I have to put a lot of effort into it.
Yeah.
So that is what I appreciate about what they're doing. Like me, I'm not a professional athlete. I'm not a professional athlete at all, but some of my favorite people are like Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, Pete Sampras, Muhammad Ali. Because
Brittany Griner.
Of course.
Well, I like her.
And her.
And Dawn Staley. I love Dawn.
Her just the her focus and determination. Now. Her pregnant old marriage wife now.
We've all sat here. We've all had things to do where we go, you know what? I'm going to go get this. I'm going to get this. I'm going to do this. You've rocked the stage. You're like, you know what? This one's going to be mine tonight.
Right.
And that comes from that athletic mentality where you just realize I'm not going to lose.
And
that's a true thought process.
I've talked about that. The people that we know in comedy who have done athletics or played music.
Yeah.
Something along those lines are just better.
Yeah.
They're just better because you're like, I gotta knuckle down and do this or I'm
you
not.
You tap into that.
I'm not going to. I gotta knuckle down. Yeah. I gotta knuckle down and do this.
At some point, you gotta go, it's me.
If you play music, you realize at some point, I gotta knuckle down and play. And this is what this guy, this piece of shit, I'm like.
And he takes away from the teacher.
What
thing?
If Jamie Foxx came and said, I want to speak? Are you going to tell him no? Because it's literally the same crapshoot.
As a
matter of fact, it's worse with performance arts because there's no quantifiable thing.
Right.
With basketball or anything else, he's knocking it out of the box with stats.
Right.
There's none of that in performance arts.
But put it like this, though. Let's say a Nobel Prize winning physicist wanted to come to the school. Who is all his achievements are in academics, but still astronomically long odds to get to that level.
Right.
Yeah.
Would he allow that guy?
Right.
He's not. It's not. The kids aren't looking up to him for fame because he's not famous.
Right.
So they would just be like, okay, well, we'll hear from this really smart guy.
Well, you can even bring in, what's the guy? Neil deGrasse Tyson,
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
You can bring him in, but not every physicist is going to be that guy who can translate it to become the guy who speaks on the cosmos.
Who is a good talker and who can speak well and who's personable.
But you might make a movie like Interstellar. You might get to work with Chris Nolan and write Interstellar and have a fucking amazing science behind the whole thing.
Or you just have a good job. You just work at a college. Yeah.
Man, you can become an engineer for NASA and keep it simple.
Yeah.
Or, like we were talking about with the arts, right? Jamie Foxx comes to the school. You may not win an Oscar, but you can write Wolf Cop.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You can write fucking Wolf Cop.
You can write Wolf Cop.
It's on Netflix. You're being interviewed by three guys on.
Yeah. Because you had a vision for yourself of
creativity, imagination.
Which reminds me, Steph Curry, you're welcome on our podcast.
Please.
Don't come, Steph.
We gave Wolf Cop guy about 20 minutes. We'll give you about 9 minutes.
We want Clay Thompson.
9 minutes.
We want Draymond Green. We want you, Steph.
9 minutes is a pretty good fuck, though. So
if you bring your daughter on, though, we'll give you 15.
Yeah.
We know what it's like trying to raise kids.
Just your daughter. You bring her on. We'll give you her
chance. That's what cracks me up. How do you get shitted on for having your kids sitting? I mean, how does that happen?
Reporters.
Come on now.
It's just reporters who are setting the agenda of what's happening.
Well, these are the same reporters who say, we must have immediate access to the athletes, so I need to talk to them in the locker room. Well, wait a minute. Give me 5 minutes to get my head right.
Yeah, can I put my dick in my pants?
It's like, no. We want to talk to you right the fuck now.
Can I draw the dick off? Can I draw it off?
My dick is still out right now.
It's out and wet.
Come on, man.
And I ain't even been fucking.
You're right. Give me 5 minutes. Give me 5 to get my hair right. I just
hold on. I gotta put my dick. Sorry. Excuse me. Pardon me. I'll get that later.
That's where they get those crazy looks.
Next question.
In the junction with the 20. Where we at?
We're probably it's time to wrap up.
All right. Let's bring this one home. In closing, in retrospect, that guy's a douchebag. Who was probably just trying to get some
he was trolling.
Looks.
Get some clicks.
Trolling. He was trolling. Just
to get He's clicking, clicks. Man.
What do you say? What do you call it, Andy? Clickbait.
It's the excrement of the internet.
Yeah.
Dick.
Yeah.
Are you smarter than the fifth graders coming back?
Here's the thing. Don't come to my
Jeff Foxworthy stays working.
Man, does he? Does he?
There's a TV on in here. That's a commercial. Yeah.
But he said, don't come to my school, Steph Curry, but please read my blog.
And can I get some tickets? Can I get some tickets to the game?
Right. Please read my blog.
Dick.
Open letters is it's that whole
I hate
thing,
them,
like,
man. I hate them. Open
nothing
letters
is more
closed minded
than an open letter.
Please, just tell, Dick. Just talk. Write an open letter exactly to the person, and then put it in their mail, and then let them read it.
Hey, Steph Curry, just want to let you know that I'm a teacher, and I'm a really good progressive teacher, and I try really hard. My kids are dumbasses.
Yeah.
So maybe you shouldn't come talk to them because they're going to misinterpret everything you say.
They have no clue of what you come to do.
they're fucking idiots, man.
You know these niggas, Steph. You wasn't one of them. You went to private school.
These kids are in 10th grade. They're taking math 6.
What he did was he 8 miles Steph Curry. He was like, you went to Cranbrook. That's the private school.
What do you know? You're from Cranbrook.
That's hilarious, man. Like, come on, dude. Leave him be.
All right, people. Listen, we had a great time with you guys today. You guys come on back on Thursday. We will be here for you guys. We're going to be talking about the Duggars. We didn't get a chance to get to it. We'll be
talking about them a little bit, right?
The Duggars. Yeah, we'll talk about them. But there's probably more detail.
I don't know.
We'll talk about some other things. Hey, Wood, give me your stuff.
Man, you know me. You can follow me on Twitter at Woody C. You can find me on Facebook at Heywood Turner C. Jr. Follow me on those social networks because that's where my Reverb Nation clicks to and let you know when I have shows going on. I'll be at Fishhead Cantina June 18th. I'll be out at David Buster's in Columbia June 27th.
David Buster's doing shows again.
Yeah, yeah.
Are they really?
Oh, they're doing it with comedy.com, a roast battle.
Who's booking that?
Jesse Rivas and Joey LaFaro.
You're doing a roast
Jesse
battle?
Rivas?
Yeah, yeah. I'm doing I'm judging Damo and somebody else.
Oh, you're judging. Okay,
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
gotcha.
I'm not in it. No. And then I'm what's that place? Second shit show up in whatever that bar is in Baltimore. Mike Quinlan's show. It's a nice one. Wyatt Snack is doing the show, so we're opening up. It'll be good and fun.
Okay. All right.
Second Saturday shit show. Find me on one of those social networks, and you'll get the information to that
stuff. There you go. You guys come on back.
I got a show this Friday the 12th at Jam and Java in Vienna, Virginia. I think it's a 10 o'clock show. I'll put the info on my website and on Twitter. It's a few comics. I guess I'm headlining it. But Kev McCarron, Tak Moffat, Catherine Jessup, Martin Phillips, Candace August will be on the show. Oh, so come to the show. It'll be a good time. And I'll have that on my website by the time this goes up. Probably not. Go. Probably not, actually. But I'll try.
Auto Bar. That's where we are, June 11th.
Auto Bar in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will be at the Improv in August. I think the week starts. Let me look at my calendar.
Oh, I'm at the Improv Lounge late June. That's on my website, too. It will be. The Improv Side Room on June 26th.
Yeah, my website. I guess I'm there August 13th, 14th, and 15th. With Joey Diaz. It's going to be a great show.
Nice. Great comic.
Sure I have something between, but for now, I'm at the Improv in August. Plan accordingly. Listen, we had a great time with you guys today. I'm back, bitches. I'm happy to be here with you guys. I want to thank Heywood for sitting in with us.
Hey.
And Heywood will be back with us on Thursday.
Yes, it will.
And I hope you guys enjoyed today's podcast. As always, when we're bringing it to you guys, be sure to look out for Wolf Cop 2 Electric Boogaloo. Support.
It's going to be a howlingly good time.
Howlingly good. Howlingly good. I'm Randolph Terrace.
I'm Andy Klein.
And I'm Heywood Turnip Seed Jr.
We got three guys on. And we are out.
Big up.
Grizz 9 and 10, Mickey Mac was on that butter class. His ass sat way in the back. How I know, cause I know I used to blow with the bro. He didn't mind, I used to read him his own headlines. Cause he could not read him in school. Wouldn't need him if the lines would have went like this. Mickey Mac jumped over the candlestick. His stack was his stats, but his D was still whack. Grizz 11 and 12, he found the wrong clientele and all. During class, he would dribble in the hall. But never got in trouble in school, but the trouble was it was cool if your brain was just another bubble. As long as you could score 52, get 33 rebounds. F- around, teams lost to only win.